You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, and for the rest of the hour, consider this. What if you could harness metal-breathing bacteria, tiny microbes found in the environment, and put them to work at hazardous waste sites around the country? They could mop up, say, radioactive uranium at former nuclear weapons factories. Cheap. They work very cheap bacteria. Cheap, safe way to clean up contaminated soil and water. And as a bonus, they can produce electricity, too. Wow, where do we get some of that stuff? Well, it's all around us. It sounds like science fiction. And my next guests don't think it is fiction. In fact, they're working on that. And they have carefully studied this metal-breathing microbe. They've even sequenced its DNA on display in the journal Science this week. And in the true spirit of applied science, one of them is working on a pilot project to mop up radioactive waste at a contaminated site in Colorado. And they're with us today to talk about their research. Let me introduce them. Barbara Mathey is a collaborative investigator at the Institute for Genomic Research in Rockville, Maryland. She joins us today from our NPR studios in Washington. Welcome to the program, Dr. Mathey.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. Derek Lovely is a distinguished university professor and head of the Department of Microbiology at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, and he joins us today from the studios of member station WFCR. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Lovely.
Thank you, Ira. Nice to be here again.
Dr. Mathey, why are you so interested? What got you interested in studying this bacteria?
Well, basically, I started out as a graduate student doing work in environmental engineering, and I always had a great interest in microbes, and through my work there, I became aware of processes that we call bioremediation. And I became more and more interested in how microorganisms, the microbes, are important in these bioremediation processes. And so that actually led me to take a job in Derek Lovely's lab, and I spent some time working with him there on this organism. And ultimately from there, I was able to move to the Institute for Genomic Research and continue my efforts there.
Dr. Lovely, tell us about this Geobacter family of bacteria. Mm-hmm. You discovered them, didn't you?
That's right, Ira. The first one came out of mud in the Potomac River just outside Washington, D.C. What's so interesting about these organisms is they have a novel capacity to transfer electrons outside their body. They've been doing this for millions or probably billions of years, transferring electrons onto iron oxides. This is the way they naturally make their living. But this ability to transfer electrons in this manner has some nice practical applications. They can, in addition to transferring electrons onto iron, they can transfer electrons onto various radioactive metals, as you referred to earlier. They can also transfer electrons onto the surface of electrodes. So this gives us a potential way for harvesting electricity from various types of waste organic matter.
How does it do that? How does it firstly find what it wants to eat there? Can it actually seek out in the soil?
That's something that we've recently discovered that came out of sequencing this genome, is that basically we now know it has a way to sense iron and swim towards the iron in order to find the iron that it needs to live on.
Wow. 1-800-989-8255 this hour. We're talking about the Geobacter family of bacteria. It's really interesting. Dr. Mathey, how does this bacteria then help us clean up radioactivity? Is it attracted to uranium, iron also?
Well, that's certainly one of the things we believe is happening. As Derek mentioned, we found a number of what are known as chemotaxis genes in the genome. And so these are genes that allow it to sense different concentrations of chemicals and probably metals and actually move towards them. So it's likely that that's part of what it's doing to actually find the metals. And of course, as Derek mentioned, as part of its metabolism, as part of its need to get energy from food, it uses uranium as a part of that process.
So it eats the uranium?
It doesn't actually eat the uranium. What it actually does is it transforms the uranium. So it basically uses what we call a respiration process. So that's a process where it's transferring electrons. And this is part of this process of metabolism that it performs in order to gain energy for itself. Mm-hmm. And in that process of transferring electrons, it can actually move electrons to the uranium. And when that happens, it transforms the uranium into a different form that then becomes less soluble in water and will actually precipitate from, let's say, contaminated groundwater.
And uranium's pretty heavy, right? So it should be easy to find it there.
Huh? That's right.
That's right.
Wow. And so I understand that there's a pilot program. I mentioned this in the intro. Mm-hmm. There's a pilot program to clean up a waste site in Colorado?
That's right, Ira. The Office of Science for the Department of Energy for the last two summers has supported field experiments in where we've been developing strategies for stimulating the growth of geobacter in these uranium-contaminated sites. What's turned out to work is really a very simple process. We basically drip acetate or vinegar, acetic acid, into the groundwater. This is a food that geobacter really likes. It grows very fast, and in the process is then transferring the uranium the way that Barbara mentioned from a very soluble form to an insoluble form. So this is beneficial, then it prevents the uranium from migrating any further.
And so you just scoop it out?
That will be the plan. We haven't gotten that far yet,
right,
because we're just working on the first step of it. But there are several strategies for then extracting that uranium once it's concentrated into a small discrete zone.
That's amazing. Now, if it attacks all kinds of, well, if it eats, as you say, is the wrong word, if it finds other metals, could it find other hazardous heavy metals that we have in the soil, mercury, cadmium, things like that?
Well, it's interesting you should mention that. Mercury, I think, is one example we're starting to look into now. This came out of sequencing the genome that was reported in Science Today. We can see the genes or genes of similar sequence found in other organisms known to use mercury. So we think it has that capability. We already know it can use other radioactive metals like technetium, cobalt, and even plutonium.
So how efficient is it at doing this?
In the field experiments, it's been quite efficient. We've had removals of 70 up to 90% removal in some wells. I think we still have some optimization for a large-scale removal at that high of efficiency, but it's very encouraging.
And so I'm looking in my mind down the road. I'm considering, you know, a lot of these hazardous waste dumps with heavy metals in them, uranium, other kinds of things. You sprinkle the ground with this bag with the bacteria, and they do their work, and you come back how much later to clean up what they left behind?
That's
oversimplification.
It's actually even simpler than that.
Is that
because
right?
You don't. That's right. You don't have to sprinkle the ground with the geobacters. These are natural constituents of almost all soils.
Uh-huh.
And normally, though, they would be in relatively low numbers. But by simply adding some of this food, the acetate that they like, we can get them to become extremely numerous and begin activity. So we don't even have to add the microorganisms, just some acetate, which again is vinegar. Very simple.
I'm just stunned at the simplicity. And is this patentable?
Actually this process is patented already.
I was wondering why you were But it's a lot, there else, let's go to the phones because there's some people want to talk about this. Let's go to Cambridge. Hi, Chris in Cambridge. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. My question was, if you have a high concentration of these things, and I'm not sure exactly what kind of an environment they want, but they sound like they're not particularly fragile if they're just living in the soil and stuff. What happens if, now that you can make a sort of an unnatural concentration of these things?
Oh, we lost him. Yeah, is this going to run away with itself? I imagine is what Chris is going to say on that cell phone there. Can you wreck the balance of nature of all, you know, the microbes in the soil, I guess is what he's saying.
Well, I think in general the stimulation process that Derek talked about, that's something that we would apply the acetate to stimulate their growth. And I think once you basically take that away, the numbers of Geobacter are likely to fall back closer to what their original levels were.
So we should.
That's right.
So we should.
I was just going to say.
Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Alphonse, it's your turn. Go ahead.
We did actually see the numbers drop off as soon as we stopped adding the acetate this last summer. So I don't think a concern about runaway populations of Geobacter is too much of a concern.
So there's no concern. You know, we have hemoglobin in our bodies, which I guess has iron in it, right? We wouldn't be concerned about the bacteria attacking the blood.
No, I don't think so. This organism doesn't, from the work that we've done looking at the genome, it doesn't appear to have any genes that we would consider that would confer pathogenicity to it. So we don't think that it's really would be able to inhabit the human body and cause any problems.
Now, let me look at the other interesting aspect of this, and that is the electrical part. You say that in the process of chomping on the iron, it moves electrons around, which is an electrical current, and you were saying talking about that. Can we make a bacteria battery that lives on acetate and just keep putting metal inside of it to produce electricity?
Well, you don't actually even need the metal. What we've shown so
don't
far
need the
is
metal.
No.
What does it? How does it keep? Well, go ahead. I'm listening.
In that case, Geobacter is using the electrode instead of the metal. So the electrode serves the same purpose that the metal normally would in accepting electrons.
Uh-huh.
And electrons are transferred directly onto the electrode. I mean, we've shown that it's as simple as just sticking an electrode into some mud, and this could be any type of mud you can find in your backyard.
Didn't you do this before in a different paper, sticking mud into it?
Yeah, we did. This is one of the early or more recent discoveries that we've made of novel capabilities of Geobacter. But many high school and junior high school students have done this for science projects ever since the last time I talked to you, Ira.
Right. That's why we had you on last time, talking about sticking those probes in the ground.
Mm-hmm. And we were inundated with calls. It was great.
But no, Rayovac hasn't called yet to ask about making a Infrared here, any of those battery companies.
No, but some companies interested in microbial fuel cells are I think, looking at this quite seriously now for developing batteries that can be powered with renewable energy sources.
All right, let's go to the phones. It's creating quite an interest. Christine in Louisville. Hi, Christine.
Hi. My question is there a potential for this bacteria to ever be used in humans who are mercury or heavy metal toxic?
Yeah, can we clean out the mercury from us? You know, we see the news about tuna fish this week, and we have all this mercury coming out of the coal-fired power plants that are feeding the tuna fish this mercury.
Well, I think my take on it would be that at the moment, from looking at the genome, again, we don't really see evidence that Geobacter would grow well in the environment of the human body. It's really an organism that's found naturally in the outdoor environment. And I think not without tweaking its genome would we be able to have it do those kinds of processes.
So you couldn't use it in dialysis, for example, if there's mercury in the blood.
Well, I wouldn't
run it through there or something.
I wouldn't discount anything. I think that if you thought about it long enough, it might be possible to come up with some scenario. But just in general, I would say at this point, we don't really have any evidence that we could do that easily. It would take a considerable effort to make something like that happen.
Okay, Christine.
Thank you.
1-800-989-8255. Talking with Derek Lovely and Barbara Mathay. Dr. Lovely, why do you go around in the Potomac mud? I mean, did you find these in the... is that just something you geeky scientists like to do and stir up the mud?
Yep, basically.
That's right.
That's pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to say that I foresaw this era, Ira, but it's just... actually, we were just interested in contaminants in the Potomac River and looking at this potential for the iron that we knew was abundant in the mud to help with the contaminant cleanup. And then since then, it's just kind of been one thing after another that we found that Geobacter keeps having these other novel capabilities.
Mm. Talking about Geobacter this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. So this is Geobacter a whole family of bacteria that have these properties? Are there other cousins of it that you know, do other kinds of things?
Yes, there's quite...
Yes, it is. Yep. Go ahead, Derek.
Tell us about that. No, it's fascinating.
I think we have probably about 50 isolates or different species of this family right now. Its formal name is Geobacteraceae for the family. Many of them have this same capability of transferring electrons onto metals or onto electrodes. Some of them have some other unique bioremediation capabilities. Some of them, for example, can degrade aromatic hydrocarbons. These are contaminants that are of greatest concern in petroleum contamination of groundwater, and we've done a number of studies using Geobacter to remove petroleum contaminants from groundwater. It's also recently been recognized that some of the geobacters can also grow on chlorinated solvents, and these are the contaminants that are concern of from, say, dry cleaning solvents and other pesticides, that type of thing. As we continue to look at it, we just find more and more capabilities that have some practical application.
Could you find some that can take carbon dioxide out of the air, or, you know, sit in the pipes and whatever of a power plant and remove the CO2 as it comes out? Or the soot or anything like that?
Yeah, that's actually the opposite of what they like to do, is they like to make carbon dioxide. So it would take some work to go the other way.
I see. So they could sequester it if you could get enough of them to suck it out of the atmosphere or out of something. No.
We don't have strong evidence that it really can take CO2 from the atmosphere. It usually breaks down compounds into carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what's left after it's done its work. It's got these heavy metals left and it's got carbon dioxide left. Is that what's left?
That's right.
Yeah,
but small amounts of carbon dioxide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Small amounts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not contributing significantly to the carbon dioxide problem.
Do you think there are a lot more of these undiscovered geobacters lying around that you can go search through the mud some more?
I'm sure there's. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there's many species.
Right. We can tell by looking at the DNA just extracted from these environments that there's a really large diversity of these organisms, all with slightly different characteristics.
Mm-hmm. And so the longer you look, the more you find. It sounds like this is like nature's cleaning crew here, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think microbes in general have they're exquisite chemists, and they have the ability to perform all kinds of metabolic processes. So not only the family of Geobacter, but there's many other microbes that we can potentially use for bioremediation purposes, basically because they have such diverse metabolism.
Mm-hmm. Do you actually go out and hunt for new ones, or look for the, you actually have teams of people that go out, or you just wait for somebody to show up with something? I'm sure you must be looking for them.
Yeah, we're continually looking for not only geobacters, but anything that can grow on metals. This is something that we're very interested in, and you know, have found a number of unique organisms that from very different environments, from, say, deep hydrothermal vents deep in the ocean, organisms that can grow at incredibly high temperatures, organisms that can grow in all kinds of extreme environments.
Well, it's fascinating. We're going to take a short break because I want to ask you a bit about how the bacteria seeks out and gloms on to these metals. I saw a micrograph of this. It was an amazing picture of bacteria holding on to the metal. We're talking this hour about bioremediation. We're talking about a bacteria, family of bacteria, that are found naturally in the soil. If you just joined us, it's an interesting conversation. Able to glom on to metals of all kinds, and in particular radioactive metals, and have them precipitate out into the soil. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. My guest, Derek Lovely, distinguished university professor and head of the Department of Microbiology at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, and Barbara Mathay, collaborative investigator at the Institute for Genomic Research in Rockville, Maryland. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. People want to know about this. Let's go to Niles in Greenwood, South Carolina. Niles, welcome.
Hey, thank you. I had two questions and a third follow-up on this geobacter. Did they survive the dinosaur age? That'd be question number one. Question number two, what would be a home application? I'm ready to go out and put some of this on my garden or, do something on the lawn. And the other follow-up would be invent one or discover one that it would eat bad cholesterol.
All right, we'll take the first two and think number three is your stand-up, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, Niles, thanks for calling. What about people hear us now and they want to activate this in their own soil or put it on their own soil? Just feed it. You're not going to throw vinegar on the soil, are you? Or are you?
The point is that Geobacter is naturally present in their soil already. So it's carrying out this reaction of growing on iron whenever the conditions are appropriate. I can't think of much benefit in trying to make them work any harder, say, in your garden and whatnot. They're basically working at the appropriate rate to release nutrients that are absorbed onto iron and, stimulate plant growth. But I wouldn't try to make geobacter grow better in my garden anyway. Yeah.
Tell us about the other metals that we haven't mentioned before, the potential for other metals that might find some uses in growing on them. What could you, if you had just think, and I'm sure you have thought about this. Well, you know, besides uranium and the other metals, are they only heavy metals, or they could be any metals?
The primary metals that they grow on are iron and manganese. These are the most abundant metals in the Earth's crust, and this is where you typically, or how Geobacter typically grows. And the big benefit in that is basically in their cleanup of petroleum contaminants, where there's a lot of iron in the subsurface, and they can degrade contaminants using that iron.
You mean if there was an oil spill on the ground someplace, for example?
That's a good example. Yeah. A very widespread example is at some point almost all gasoline tanks at gasoline stations leak, and petroleum gets into the groundwater. And geobacters are just naturally there sopping up a fair amount of that.
And we could encourage them at the site to do that if there is a spill?
That's right. We found several ways to increase their accessibility to the iron so that they could reduce it faster. And we've worked with a couple oil companies to clean up their sites by stimulating their activity.
How about that additive that they put in gasoline? Was it MTBE?
The MTBE.
Yeah. Would it eat that stuff too?
We did find a way to stimulate MTBE degradation, a couple to iron reduction, but it's tough,
but there are potentially other microorganisms that could possibly break down that compound. That's one of the great things again about microbes, because they have this diversity of metabolism. If Geobacter, for example, couldn't break down one of these compounds, there's potentially other microorganisms that could. So that's why it's so important to study microorganisms.
And would it be fair to say then that there's probably a microorganism for everything that might clean it up?
Well, it almost looks that way. Yeah, it seems like, compounds such as PCBs that, you know, perhaps people have heard about, these were man-made chemicals. And so they've only been in the environment recently, and yet there are microorganisms that are able to break down PCBs. It can be a difficult task, but they do. There are groups of microorganisms that can do this, so they're pretty good at adapting to whatever we throw at them. So there's a lot of potential there.
How much potential is great, but how much research and development is actually going on in developing all the microbes you're talking about?
I think there's a lot of interest in it now, and I think the field of genomics really is helping to drive that, because basically with genomics, we're looking at what the genetic complement of an organism is. So we're looking at what are the potential metabolic processes a microbe could perform. And so as we learn more about that, that helps to drive the research that people then do in the lab or in the field to verify whether those potentials exist and under what conditions. So I think genomics is really helping to drive a lot of that research.
I think that's a good point, Barbara, because, for example, we've been able to take the genome sequence of Geobacter that Barbara derived and have been able to make a computer model of Geobacter to predict how it might function under different environmental conditions. And I think this is going to be the strategy for approaching bioremediation in the future, is to sequence the genome as Barbara did for Geobacter, develop a computer model, and this can help design the bioremediation strategies before we ever go out into the field, and can save a lot of time.
Could you also tweak the genome to make it more efficient or work on a certain kind of metal that you'd like?
That's possible. Yes, it is. You can move genes around in bacteria. So in theory, you can take different metabolic processes and move them into other organisms. I mean, there are some limits with that, and it's not a process that we've perfected, but the ability to move genes around is definitely there. So there is the potential to design microorganisms, if you will, to do certain processes.
Let's go to the phone. So Tobin in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Hi, Tobin.
Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm going in the same direction I am. If we can design genomes to extract uranium, can we do the same, for example, for gold? Can it be an ore separation process? Mm-hmm. And then number two, quickly, doesn't this indicate some sort of proof, or not a proof, but indication that extraterrestrial life could exist if organisms this way can survive in very hostile environments? I'll tell you off the air, and thanks again.
Thank you. Yeah, what about using it to pan for or to concentrate the gold somehow, make it precipitate out?
I think that's a great idea. We actually did that, say, 2 to 3 years ago. Yeah. We published that result. You can use these organisms to take gold out of solution, and they're very efficient. It's quite an astounding process. I thought that the gold would be a little toxic for them, but they're able to also handle gold.
Is that where you got your money for your research? I mean, but
that's our backup. That's
your, yeah.
But is it really an efficient thing? I mean, seriously, you know, gold's $400 an ounce now. All you got to do is make an ounce of it, and you've made some money. You know, if you go to where, let's say you go out to California, where they used to pan for gold, maybe there's still some gold coming out of in the water there. Could you just sluice the water through the bacteria?
The price of gold is going to have to increase dramatically. The problem is there's so little amount of gold in any one amount of water that you have to pump a lot of water. So you get the pumping cost is where you lose the money.
Mm, I so gotcha.
The price would have to be a lot higher.
All right, Mike in Anchorage. Hi, welcome to Science Friday, Mike.
Hi, Ira and doctors.
Go ahead.
This sounds awesome. I guess my question was, you mentioned there's a precipitate, and I was wondering, are there any harmful byproducts in the precipitate? Hopefully not.
All right, good question. Anything harmful? You mentioned there's a little bit of CO2 that comes out. Is that the only thing?
Well, the precipitate is a mineral known as uraninite. So this is a natural uranium mineral. So we're not making anything that isn't naturally seen in the environment. And it's very stable and basically stays where Geobacter puts it. So we haven't seen any deleterious effects to this process as of yet.
Talking about Geobacter, this very interesting bacteria this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Jack in Minneapolis. Hi, Jack.
Hello?
Hi there. Go ahead.
I'm not Jack, but that's okay.
Okay.
I was in Minneapolis, but I'm in the freeway, so now I'm in Circle Pines. But I had a question which you may have answered. In the sense that radioactivity is, of course, a nuclear phenomenon, as you, you know, the difference between U-235 and U-238 is three neutrons and has nothing to do with electrons. So since these phages attach themselves and displace electrons, presumably, at least the last thing you were talking about was that they cause the uranium to be bound into some other compound. However, if it started out as radioactive, nuclei, the new compound is still going to have a radioactive uranium in it, which is still going to decay and be radioactive. So how is that problem addressed?
You get a sludge left that's still radioactive, I imagine.
Right. That's a very good point. But the advantage of this technique is that we're taking uranium that's spread over acres of land and concentrating it down into, say, a few cubic meters. So we're greatly concentrating uranium, and that makes it then very easy to extract. Unfortunately, there is no way with microorganisms to take away the radioactivity, but at least we can concentrate it and greatly facilitate its disposal later.
Could you take this to Chernobyl, where there's all this radioactive ground, and try it out?
There's a number of elements at Chernobyl that are probably, some of them, such as the strontium and whatnot, we haven't got a microbiological solution for that yet.
In other words, you haven't found the right germ then.
That and the right chemistry, too.
Right.
It's a complicated problem.
What do you mean the right chemistry? Tell us what that means.
Again, uranium its favorable chemistry is that it switches from the soluble to insoluble state, whereas the strontium bound to the soil, it's a difficult problem in extracting it.
So is there a solution, though, that you can work out?
I've been focusing
on
the uranium.
There's probably always a solution, and I'm sure if we work hard enough, maybe. But that's a difficult problem.
Yeah.
It'll take some time.
It turns out in this country, this research is supported by the Department of Energy. Uranium is by far the biggest contaminant of concern.
Right.
How big a contaminant is it? Give us an idea of how big it is.
Oh, boy, that's really not my. I wouldn't want to throw out a number.
It's I think essentially it's in terms of at least at the sites where mining and refining have taken place, it's probably one of the metals that are seen the most. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't give you an exact number. But
as far as you know, we have these waste dumps of radioactive stuff. Sometimes it's leaking out. Would it be for sites like that?
Definitely, yeah. This can take care of uranium basically at any site.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I think where do you go from here? What's your next step?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one step from the genome is that we now have the tools to begin to learn how Geobacter actually carries out these unique processes like treating uranium or producing electricity. I do think there's a lot of potential for enhancing its activity, either by modifying the environment in different ways or by genetically engineering Geobacter to work better. And I think this is where the research supported by the Department of Energy is headed now. On the practical side, in terms of the field experiments, we just need a lot more experience and time and some more trials before this gets transferred into a large-scale type of process.
Well, I wish both of you good luck, and we'll have you back to talk about what comes next.
Great. Thank you, Ira.
Great.
You're welcome.
Looking forward to it.
Have a good holiday season.
Okay, thanks. Happy
holidays. My guests have been Dr. Barbara Mathey, a collaborative investigator at the Institute for Genomic Research in Rockville, Maryland, and Dr. Derek Lovely, distinguished university professor and head of the Department of Microbiology at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. Earlier, we spoke with Dr. Ted Eichhoff at the University of Colorado Health Science Center in Denver. Our program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Berquist is our director and our web producer, and we had help today from engineers Bart Feller and Kara Foster in Amherst and Mitch Eaton in Washington. If you want to surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, you can find links to the topics we've talked about today. You can also find archive editions of Science Friday. You can listen to them in real audio or download them on your audible.com player. Subscribe to them. Also send us mail, or if you want to use the old classic mail, we have a new address here at Science Friday. You might want to jot it down. Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. That's 54 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. I'm Ira Flato in New York.